Tukaram, the occupied Palestinian territory, the West Bank, 65 miles north of Gaza. Wearing a helmet, Isabel Jung, a journalist in her 30s, is sitting in the back of a car. An Israeli military operation has just begun in a Palestinian refugee camp, targeting armed fighters known locally as the Resistance. A team of BBC journalists have been on the ground for 5 weeks in the West Bank, investigating the Israeli military's conduct.
The soldiers killed everybody.
They're killing everybody?
Everybody, yeah. Just be careful.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Palestinians say Israeli soldiers are committing abuses in the camp. The team is trying to get inside. Now Isabel is on foot.
It's so creepily eerie around here. There's just no one out, no one in the streets, no kids playing. Everyone, it seems, is just hiding inside with this eerie sound of the drone over our heads.
She looks over her shoulder as someone speaks to her, then takes cover behind a wall when shots ring out.
Huh? Sounds very close.
It's in, roof.
Seems like the IDF are literally just on this corner. Targeting someone.
A convoy of three armoured vehicles comes down the rubble-strewn street.
As you can see, I mean, this is the entrance to the camp here and stretches all the way down here. Complete destruction. All these buildings have been mowed down. The roads have been razed. You can see some Israeli military vehicles up there. It really does seem like the whole city is on lockdown.
A plume of dark smoke rising above distant rooftops. Then an ambulance stops.
Mahaba, how are you guys doing? What's it like inside?
Nobody is allowed in.
What are you hearing about the number of casualties?
There are casualties. We're getting calls, but we can't get to them. They, the Israeli army, struck an ambulance. We evacuated our crew, and they told us to leave.
What's your plan now? What will you do now?
We're going to try and get another injured person through a different entrance to the camp. Okay. Isabel gets into the back of the ambulance.
So we're just with the paramedics and they're trying to get to some of the injured people. Oh, the Israeli military here. Seem to be blocking the way. I'm not sure we're going to get past. Seems like they're stopping them from going through.
We're at gunpoint.
We're at gunpoint. They've got guns pointed to us.
British media! British media!
British press!
British press!
Journalist!
Journalist!
Journalist! Pointing guns at us. British press!
Journalist.
British press!
Television!
British press! Journalist!
Step outside, please.
Okay.
Come with
me. Stand over here.
Okay.
Thank you.
One soldier goes to check inside the ambulance, while another holds Isabel at gunpoint.
Good building.
3 months earlier, October the 7th, 2023. The Gaza border. The sun rising into a clear dawn sky.
Israelis woke up today to find their worst nightmares had come true.
Palestinians qui s'infiltrent à plusieurs endroits du territoire israélien et
des marks the most significant hit in Israel in decades.
Families were killed, revelers at a music festival were shot, and civilians were terrorized in the street.
Unprecedented attack by Palestinian militants on Israeli territory.
Coffins draped in the Israeli flag.
In this moment of tragedy, I want to say to them and to the world and to terrorists everywhere, the United States stands with Israel.
Burnt out kibbutz dwellings, the mangled remains of a child's bike and rocking horse in a debris-strewn yard. Colourful paper garlands hanging from the door of a fridge freezer in a smoke-blackened kitchen and dark stains on a tiled floor.
October 7th, 2023 was the bloodiest day in Israel's history. Armed Palestinian gunmen launched a brutal attack, killing around 1,200 men, women and children. Over 250 more were taken hostage.
Israel is at war. We didn't want this war. It was forced upon us in the most brutal and savage way. We will exact a price that will be remembered by them and Israel's other enemies for decades to come.
An Israeli tank silhouetted against an orange sky.
The attack was carried out by Hamas, a designated terrorist group. In response, the Israeli military invaded Gaza, the small strip of Palestinian land that's controlled by Hamas. But the International Court of Justice has ordered Israel to take all measures within its power to prevent its forces from committing acts that violate the UN Convention on Genocide. More than 34,000 Palestinians have been killed so far, and a famine is said to be imminent.
Israel's commitment to international law is unwavering. The charge of genocide leveled against Israel is not only false, it's outrageous.
While the world has been focused on the actions of the Israeli military in Gaza, there's another section of Palestinian territory that's had far less scrutiny, the West Bank. It's partially run by the Palestinian Authority, but the Israeli military has been here for decades, known as the occupation. Since October 7th, that military has drastically increased its operations here. Israel says it has the most moral army in the world. But now, record numbers of children have been killed here. Violence is surging. So how is that army conducting itself in the West Bank?
The Other War. Israeli soldiers conduct a thorough search of the ambulance in which Isabel's hitched a ride.
So the Israeli soldiers are stopped us at gunpoint and are saying that we can't go any further right now. They do not want press entering any closer to any of the activities that they're doing.
For the next 45 hours, the Israeli military continues their operation in Tul Karim camp. Eventually, they withdraw. Injured civilians begin to emerge, some carrying the flags of armed groups, including Hamas. The Palestinians are here to bury their dead.
Isabel walks with a crowd of mourners following a red-draped coffin carried aloft.
So there's this funeral procession through the camp right now. As seems like most of the guys come here to come and bury the seven people who died in the last couple of days whilst this Israeli raid is going on. And they're now heading to the cemetery to go and bury them.
A man holding a Palestinian flag at the graveside. Then a small apartment building, the front of which has been ripped away to expose floors of small, still furnished rooms.
Away from the funeral, this is our first chance to get inside Tul Karim camp, to see the aftermath of the operation.
To 12-year-old Haytham.
What was it like waking up and seeing your street like this morning?
Everything's gone. There's nothing left. They came to the house, break the screens and the televisions.
Your TV's gone?
Yeah.
Any, your games?
Well, they shot everything. There's another soldier, he had a knife and he was threatening us and telling us to look the other direction.
That must have been really scary. What was going through your mind?
Nothing. I was just scared. Just scared, holding my brother's hand, telling him there's nothing to be afraid of. He's telling me, and I'm telling him. They make me so mad.
A wrecked car. Then.
Oh wow.
Star of David graffiti.
Inside one home, a family tells us their mural of Al-Aqsa Mosque, one of the holiest sites in Islam, has been defaced. The adjoining wall has October 7th sprayed on it, all apparently by Israeli soldiers.
Were you in here when they came in?
Yeah.
Resident Hania says, yeah, I saw them. He aimed a weapon at me, right here. He said, I'll shoot you. You have no land or home here. Palestine is ours. Go to Jordan. Leave. He said, get out. He put the gun to my head. Strewn bedding and clothing. An overturned table.
I mean, they've really come in here and totally ransacked this place. They've just really desecrated the house and written 7th of October everywhere. Stars of David everywhere. I mean, they've really made their presence felt.
We sent the Israeli military pictures of the graffiti. They said it's contrary to what they expect from their soldiers. They also said they would review any complaints about civilians being threatened.
The little girl asked, will they kill us, shoot us, take us away? They wept and screamed, terrified. I hugged them. They were all scared and crying. A red-painted Star of David on a bathroom mirror.
There's widespread destruction in house after house. It's all part of what the Israeli military says was a counter-terrorism operation, where they claim hidden explosives were present. An Israeli soldier was seriously injured in the fighting, and a video was released showing what they said they seized. Weapons and hundreds of explosive devices. They said they searched 1,000 buildings and interrogated hundreds of suspects.
Footage of the seized arms cache.
But what's also clear is civilians are being impacted. Palestinian fighters see their role as resisting Israeli military occupation. They confronted the army in the camp.
This guy witnessed the killing of one of the fighters down here. He doesn't want to show his face because he's a little bit nervous, but I'm going to follow him and see what he's got to show us. Okay. Oh, there's a lot of blood. This must have been where he was shot.
Stone steps stained red in an alleyway.
The man who was killed here is being talked about throughout the camp. Some claim he was being abused by the soldiers.
So someone who was nearby just showed me these photos that they took, where you can see he's here. Body looks like at this point they've used these brown and black bits of fabric here to tie his feet together. Now his body appears to have been dragged further down the stairs with a cable attached to his feet. So we don't know exactly what's been going on here. We're going to go and talk to some of the people inside. So what happened here? You were here the last couple of days?
After he was killed, they, the soldiers, dragged him inside. They tied his hands and feet and subjected him to brutal acts of beating, insults and trampling. They peed on it, the body.
They peed on it?
A small boy scraping at the red-stained step.
We asked the Israeli military about the treatment of the body. They said upon examining the body, explosives were found, and that they had to restrain his hands and feet to ensure their own safety. They didn't comment on allegations of him being urinated on, beaten, and dragged. While the fighter likely posed a threat, there are serious questions about the behaviour of the Israeli soldiers in this incident. Many Palestinians here say they're being subjected to a campaign of revenge by the Israeli military for the Hamas October 7th attacks.
The West Bank's conglomeration of mid-rise buildings.
Israel built a barrier to separate itself from the West Bank, but its military still operates inside as part of an occupation. To understand why, you need to go back generations. In 1917, the British government declared public support for creating a home for the Jewish people from across the world, in Palestine. It was known as the Balfour Declaration. The British would occupy Palestine for almost 30 years, before handing the matter over to the UN. In 1948, following the horrors of the Holocaust, the State of Israel was born.
Palestine lies shattered by bombs and strewn with dead. Victorious Haganah troops have driven the Arabs out of the beleaguered city.
Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians, who made up the majority of the population here, were displaced from their land.
For these people, as the result of the war in Palestine, have either fled or been expelled from their homes and their livelihood.
Generations then grew up in neighboring countries and in refugee camps, like Tulkarm and others. Today, these camps look like concrete slums, and some have become a hotbed for Palestinian fighters. But it wasn't until 1967, during what's known as the Six-Day War, that the Israeli military would take control of the West Bank, starting the military occupation.
But the takeover has not been without incident. There were demonstrations by Palestinian Arabs.
In the 90s, American President Bill Clinton hosted the signing of the Oslo Accords, which saw both sides formally recognize each other for the first time. Many Palestinians hoped this would lead to the establishment of their own state, and Israel promised a staged withdrawal from some of the areas it occupied. But the peace process collapsed. Today, the Israeli military has expanded its control over most of the West Bank and regularly enters areas that are meant to be run by the Palestinian Authority. This has a lasting impact on the everyday lives of Palestinians and their ability to be free and equal. For months, we tried to meet and speak with the Israeli military about their role in the West Bank, but they repeatedly declined to be interviewed. Former soldiers, some of whom believe wholeheartedly in the mission of the Israeli military, and others who actively question it, have decided to talk. What they have to say is an unvarnished account.
Understanding the West Bank is really understanding the conflict in many ways.
Some fear reprisals for speaking to us, so they've asked to conceal their identity. I want these former soldiers to help me understand the Israeli military's conduct and how that might affect Palestinians.
The lives of Palestinians are affected by the military so severely. I think it would be hard to feel like you can safely walk around in your village knowing that there are soldiers there or that they could be there.
Any building and any house, in theory, is hostile to you. And you can't really trust anyone. And it's a horrible feeling. I do trust the intelligence that I was given. There are threats in places you wouldn't have thought, and you can't be naive.
We treat them like suspects of a violent crime.
It has to be traumatic, like facing death that like closely. Hundreds of thousands of kids who grow up with this experience.
The treatment of the Israeli citizens is going to be very different to the treatment of potential terrorists. The fundamental obligation of the IDF is to protect the citizens of Israel.
Which in the West Bank is obviously the settlers.
Which is in the West Bank the settlers.
You are there to protect certain people. The whole mission is the settlers themselves.
There are over 500,000 Jewish settlers living inside the West Bank. They're said to control 40% of the territory, and that's increasing. The settlements they live in are considered illegal under international law and an obstacle to peace. They sit on land that could be used to form a Palestinian state.
A packed audience in a large balconied hall. Conference promoting Israeli settlement in Gaza.
What used to be a fringe movement has now reached the highest levels of government, influencing not only the role the military plays, but also the future of this conflict. Many here want to expand settlements, and the government is supporting that. Since the start of 2024, more than 2,500 acres of land in the West Bank has been seized. Some of that may be used to build settler homes. It'll be the army's job to protect them. Others want to go even further and build settlements inside war-torn Gaza.
all the Arabs will go all over the world. Arabs will not stay. After the 7th of October, no Arab can stay here.
What is your justification for calling for the total erasure of an entire population and the replacement of that population with Jewish settlers?
When you saw the massacre that took place and you saw it, then your heart felt pain, and now you forget it. For this massacre, they will pay.
The Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, is dependent upon religious nationalists and the settler community for his own survival. It's brought him international criticism, including from his biggest ally, the United States.
Major obstacle to peace is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who has all too frequently bowed to the demands of extremists and the settlers in the West Bank.
Flying towards a rocky limestone ridge in the South Hebron Hills on the southern Western Bank and the village of Susia.
Since October 7th, thousands of settlers have been armed and drafted into the army. At the same time, there's been a rise in attacks on Palestinians by settlers, some wearing military uniforms and carrying military-issued guns. These attacks are particularly common here, in the South Hebron Hills. On one hilltop sits a settler outpost, away from their more established communities. And the man who lives here with his family has agreed to meet us. Since October 7th, he's been patrolling the area with a weapon issued by the military.
Wow. Did you build this yourself? So how many of you live out here?
Me, I have three children and a wife.
Uh-huh.
And my brother has a wife, and soon he will have his first child. And my father and his wife.
And my father and his wife.
Okay. So there's three of you guys, three families.
Yes, mm-hmm. But we all one family.
Three families in one.
Gesturing towards a young woman in a hoodie, he says, these are the guys. We have three guys living here. They're volunteers. The work we do here, nothing is for money. All the area we're grazing and we watch over. It's an area the Arabs could take over and be closer to the settlement.
So you guys are here for ideological reasons, yes, to keep the Arabs out?
Yes, only. We're keeping them legally out where they're not supposed to be.
A watchtower constructed out of wood and corrugated metal.
When did you build this guard watch?
After the war started.
So just in the last few months?
Yes, you can go up there.
Watch your step. Wow, you can really see everything from up here. What is it you're watching out for?
For terrorists. They want to kill us, all of them.
Kill us, all of them.
Take a picture of this city, Yatta and Hebron.
And these are Palestinian cities.
Palestinian terror supporters, you know, like they like Hamas. They are Hamas.
So you see everyone as living in all these cities around you as Hamas supporters?
Yes, in one way or another.
Isabel and the crew set off in the settler Shemtov's pickup, a gun resting beside him as he drives.
Who's that?
Shemtov gets out to confront two men.
Are they Palestinians?
Yes.
No, go away. You can't stand there. You can't be here. Do you want me to call the army? Leave.
What did you say to them?
I told them, I asked them if they wanted to call the army.
There has been this big spike in settler attacks, violent settler attacks towards Palestinians recently.
Where? I want to see it.
I mean, including here, right? Like, there's been a massive spike, and especially since October 7th.
Where? I want to see it. Show
well,
me
according
video.
To, I mean, last year was the most violent year on record for settler
show
attacks.
Me.
This is according to Yashin, the Israeli human rights group. It's also according to the UN.
It's bullshit.
It's bullshit?
We also make genocide in Gaza, yes? It's bullshit. It's not allowed in our culture to attack women, children. It's not allowed in our culture to rape and to kill. And in their culture, it's good if you do it to Jews.
Is that not slightly racist rhetoric to say that it's their culture that believes
no,
in...
No, you know, so I'm racist. Okay, I'll be racist. I'll be racist.
If I were racist, I wouldn't have you here. Yes? I'm not racist. I don't have a problem with anybody, with any people. And I don't have a problem with them. I know their culture. This is their culture.
Can you understand why? I mean, you know, Palestinians around here might feel scared. They know that, you know, you have the military in your pocket. You can call them at any point.
They are not afraid from us at all.
All of the terrorist attacks that have happened in the last few months doesn't feel like they're afraid from us.
Doesn't feel like they're afraid from us.
For Shemtov, living on this land is about maintaining an Israeli presence here. He sees his settlement as a front line in the defense of the Israeli state. But his ability to live here is dependent on the Israeli military. 2 days later, we return to meet Palestinians near the settlement. They say they've held and cultivated this land for generations.
So we've just got here to the point where the shepherd and the other Palestinians are, and it seems like the military's also arrived. And this is the settler we were with just the other day.
That's a good decision. That's just declared that this is our land.
You heard the law say? Things have gotten quite tense here. The Israeli military is in between the settler that we were with, who claims that this is his land, and these Palestinians who are saying that they have the right to work this land themselves. You called the military? Why?
My guys were getting attacked.
They're saying that you stole all the olive trees.
They are liars. All of them liars.
Who?
I didn't steal anything.
They're also saying that according to the courts, this land belongs to them.
According to them, I don't know. According to me, it's me. According to the army, it's mine.
According to the army, it's yours? Oh, they're shoving them.
There's a scuffle, and a man is pinned to the ground and punched.
Okay, you don't need to push me. You don't need to push me. We're moving. I'm behind the wall. Why do you keep pushing me? What's happening with this guy?
He doesn't want to move.
I think it's because he's in pain.
No, they're asking to move. He doesn't want.
I saw him. He was slammed onto the rocks. He looks like he's in a lot of pain.
It's a bit of an act. You understand?
It seems like you're only arresting and getting rid of the Palestinians who say that this is their land.
As the majority of soldiers leave, our producer Sarek gets a phone call from a Palestinian family nearby. They say they're being attacked by settlers.
What's happened?
Seems like they've disconnected the lines cut.
He's there, I see him. What are you doing? This guy's got a metal pole in his hand. Oh shit, this guy's got a gun. What's happening?
Shaky footage of a phone lying on the ground as the camera operator is surrounded.
Hey, give my phone back! Give my phone back! Give my phone back! Give my phone back!
Can I have my phone? Please, this is my phone! Give my phone back!
Tell me I'm going.
I'm going.
Thank you.
I'm going.
We're going.
Go.
Can you ask them to start walking away?
Let's walk.
Are you okay? Are you okay? What was happening just before we came?
He came to attack us. We were sitting there drinking tea. He came, spilled the tea, and attacked us. He comes to us every time. He kicks us.
Okay, guys, they're still behind us. Can you get everyone in the car, please, as quickly as possible?
Everyone in the car. Come on.
We've realised that two of the men from Shemtov's settlement are coming after us with weapons.
Everyone in the car. Guys, hello.
Just as they get closer, a soldier pulls up in his car.
Hi, we've just been attacked by settlers.
He goes to confront the two men.
After speaking to the men, the soldier says, I can't do anything because there are Israeli civilians.
You can't do anything because there are Israeli civilians?
Yes, I can't stop them or something like this.
But they just came up and started harassing these guys and then snatched my phone and threatened us with a metal pole and a gun.
But I'm not police. I'm a soldier. I can't take care.
I can't arrest Israelis because it's not my responsibility.
And I can do nothing. If I do something, it makes me a trouble.
But if that had been a Palestinian, would you arrest them?
No. If they have a difference between Palestinian or Israeli.
There's a difference?
Yes, of course, because I'm a soldier, not police.
Luis, former sergeant and current reservist.
An Israeli settler, they live under the democratic rule of the state of Israel. But the Palestinians, no. They live under the military rule.
As an Israeli soldier operating in the West Bank, what's the relationship like between the military and the settlers?
They have a lot of influence. You see these guys giving orders to the commanders. So I always ask myself, like, so who gives the order here?
There is no one officer that I ever heard that, like, said you should arrest the settler. This is not a thing. Sometimes you even see a violent person doing a violent crime, throwing something, hitting someone, trying to hit someone. And like, what you're supposed to do in this moment is extremely vague, always.
The IDF is there to protect the citizens of Israel, whether they're settlers or not, and also to maintain law and order, but not to protect the Palestinian community.
A busy market. 1,208 Palestinians were displaced due to settler violence and movement restrictions in the 3 months after October the 7th, including 586 children. The Israeli military has substantially stepped up operations into Palestinian communities across the West Bank. Al-Faraya, Northwestern West Bank. By chance, the team are inside a refugee camp as one begins. Civilians have nowhere to go. Everyone is surrounded. A man has just been shot. Medics tending to him. Palestinian fighters take to the streets with guns and homemade bombs. A man runs to a corner of a building with a rifle held in one hand. The team is forced to take cover. A family invites them inside a house that's sheltering young children. There's a rush of civilians as they head for shelter inside the house. In the living room, a small girl plugs her fingers in her ears. Looking out through a curtained window, a man turns and tells everyone, just pray to God that he protects this house and everyone in it.
The IDF are coming.
A woman holds a frightened toddler tightly to her. The IDF surround the house and break down the main gate.
BBC English!
BBC English.
Israeli soldiers enter with guns raised and a small boy frowns in a woman's arms. Three small boys armed with toy guns turn a street corner. Then they're sitting together and firing them.
The violence in the West Bank is having a huge impact on the population here. As many as 57% of residents have reported symptoms consistent with post-traumatic stress disorder. But there are physical injuries too, and those are particularly apparent when it comes to young people.
He's through here?
Yes.
Mahaba.
Hello.
How are you doing? Kayf alik?
Alhamdulillah.
This is where the bullet went in, and this is where it came out?
Madkhal. Ulazavlu al-makhraj.
Since October 7th, how many cases like Aboud have you been seeing where they've been shot or they've been harmed in some way by the Israeli military?
كمعدل ارتفع معدل من 7 ل10 حالات باليوم.
7 to 10 cases a day?
Yes.
Wow. How did this happen? How did you get hit in your shoulder?
I was going home from school when I encountered Israeli soldiers. My friend was with me. We were both surprised by them. We were running away when they shot us. My friend was killed, and I got shot in the shoulder.
Your friend was killed on the spot?
Mm. Yes.
Were you posing any threat to them? Were you holding anything? Nothing?
I only tried to run away. That is the life of every Palestinian, not only me.
It's difficult to know the exact circumstances on the day Abood was shot. But 2023 was the deadliest year on record for children in the West Bank.
A red stain on stone paving is washed away. Across the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem, a Palestinian child was killed every 3 days on average in 2023. Video footage.
We've been investigating shootings by the Israeli military. There are some where young people are shot in the back while running away. And there are others where they appear to be holding weapons, and therefore the Israeli military would argue lethal force was critical to their own protection. But there is evidence to suggest that the shooting of young Palestinians is becoming a systemic problem.
Shaky footage of a figure falling to the ground after gunshots have been fired. A satellite image of Israel and the West Bank.
We've also obtained new data that's allowed us to understand the scale of the problem and to see where children are most commonly killed in the West Bank. There's one place more than any other that is the deadliest to be a child.
Jenin in the north. An aerial view of the city. Jenin is home to armed groups who say they are fighting the Israeli occupation. For many, it is the most dangerous place in the West Bank. The city's buildings scattered across gently rising land, then an overhead view of a street.
So it's on this street just a few weeks ago that two boys, 15-year-old Basil and 8-year-old Adam, were killed by Israeli forces. We're just heading in now to meet Adam's family, who are having to try and come to terms with what's happened. Mahaba. Kifale. Can we come in?
Okay.
Great. Thank you. Shoes off?
No?
Sure?
Yeah.
You speak a little English?
She's led up a dimly lit stairwell and shown into a bedroom where sports kit is piled up on a shelf.
Oh wow, it's very blue. Is this all Adam's stuff here?
Yeah, this.
All this stuff? His shoes?
Yeah.
Are these his crisps?
He bought them a day before, on the 28th.
So what was the age difference between you two?
He was 8 years old, and I'm 14, so 6 years.
Oh, it's quite a big age difference.
Yeah.
So you were his big brother, you looked after him? He looks more cheeky than you, though.
Yeah.
Was he?
Yeah.
You must miss him.
Yeah.
A lot, says his brother.
Do you think about him much?
A lot. Holding up a black football shirt bearing a pink number 10, he says, we got him this shirt 2 months before he died, because it says Messi.
Messi.
Messi. Are you comfortable taking me back to what happened that day?
We went down to the street to play football. There were soldiers storming. They had been there for 16 hours. Basil started taking photos of them. When they fired at Basil, a bullet hit Adam here, in his head. I saw him and went towards him quickly. I was stunned and then I quickly dragged him out. I started screaming, ambulance, ambulance.
Do you have the video of that day? Can you show me?
Do it this way.
This is you?
Yeah.
I was in a state of shock. I tried to speak to him. I started saying, Adam, Adam. But he wasn't answering. His soul was leaving his body. He wipes his eyes with the back of his hand.
It must be, I mean, unbelievably difficult. His clothes are still in the wardrobe. You still play on the street that he was killed in.
I'm still in shock. It feels like I'm living in a dream. I can't believe this happened.
Thanks, sir.
Descending from overhead towards the side street where the shooting occurred.
We want to understand how and why Basil and Adam were killed. We've been meticulously piecing together what happened on this street. We've obtained copies of CCTV and mobile phone footage from multiple angles. It's allowed us to create a timeline of the shootings. In the early afternoon of the 29th of November, a convoy of at least six armoured Israeli military vehicles are returning from a nearby raid. They're travelling towards Basil and Adam. At the same time, the boys and around seven friends are on the street. Basil is holding something in his hands. It's unclear what this is. Across the street, one of the friends is filming on his phone as an Israeli military vehicle drives by. When the footage is slowed down and enhanced, it shows the driver's door opening. The driver has a direct view of the boys, being around 24 meters away from Basil and 36 from Adam. We can see from other camera angles that just a few seconds after Adam's friend captured the door opening, at least 11 shots are fired from the direction of the armored vehicle. Four bullets strike a nearby pole. Two, the shutter of a hardware store. One into a car. Another into a handrail. We've obtained copies of Basil and Adam's medical reports. They show that two bullets struck Basil in the chest.
In CCTV footage, Basil falls backwards. He tries to get up, then lies flat.
And another hit Adam in the back of the head as he was running away.
Footage of Adam tumbling to the ground. The footage on a tablet device.
We've shown the footage of the shooting to former soldiers of different ranks, both on and off camera.
Obviously, at face value, and I'm going to stress at face value, it doesn't look good. I would like to believe that there was some kind of trigger for that. It was also November when things were obviously even more raw than they are now.
It's not clear if 15-year-old kid Basil is holding something. I mean, does that not present a clear threat?
It presents a threat, but how is it a clear and present danger? There were, like, a lot of armoured cars, dozens of soldiers. Like, of course they, the kids, could do nothing to them.
Of course they can do nothing to them.
There is a possibility of unlawful, you know, activity conducted by Israeli soldiers. It happens. But you see a certain portion of reality and not the overall picture.
Tires being burned in a street.
Former soldiers have told us the use of force is meant to escalate in stages. Unlike Gaza, the West Bank is not classed as a war zone, so soldiers' use of force is meant to be more restrained. Beginning with a verbal warning in Arabic and Hebrew, escalating to the use of non-lethal weapons like flashbangs and tear gas. Then shooting in the leg. All before shooting to kill. The exact rules around when soldiers can and can't use lethal force in the West Bank are secret. But some of the rules that apply elsewhere are public. They state the use of lethal force must be a last resort in order to address a real and imminent danger to human life, and must be proportionate to the danger faced, suggesting Basil and Adam would have needed to pose a serious threat to soldiers.
In my opinion, he doesn't seem like an immediate and real threat. It would take Israeli soldier murdering a Palestinian from zero range for it to be deemed as murder in Israel.
How often did cases like this get fairly, properly, impartially investigated by the Israeli military?
Basically 0% chance of a criminal proceedings against such a soldier. The legal means to cover them up are well established, basically.
The Israeli army says every case of a child's death due to their activity in the West Bank is examined. But data suggests that less than 1% of all complaints against Israeli soldiers result in prosecutions. The killing of Basil and Adam took place at a time when the shooting of children by Israeli forces is hitting record levels. For the first time, we've been given the medical reports of 112 different minors and children who were fatally shot by Israeli forces in the West Bank from the beginning of 2023 to the end of January 2024. They're between 17 and 2 years old. We don't know how many of these people might have posed a legitimate threat to soldiers, but our analysis shows that 98% of them had injuries in the upper body, where you're more likely to be killed if shot, meaning that soldiers could be shooting to kill more often than wound in these cases, raising questions about the culture around how Israeli soldiers use lethal force.
Video footage shows an armored vehicle pulling up close to Basil's body.
After Basil and Adam were killed, a soldier can be seen photographing Basil. The Israeli army has shared a picture with us taken at the scene, which they say shows an explosive device. We've cropped the image because of its graphic content. They also say suspects had been attempting to hurl explosives towards their forces, putting them in immediate danger. They responded with fire and hits were identified. The circumstances of the event are under review. But according to all the video evidence we've examined, 8-year-old Adam was not armed when he was shot in the back of his head. We've asked several independent experts to review all our findings, including human rights lawyers, a war crimes investigator, a counter-terrorism expert, as well as members of the UN and other neutral bodies. Some gave their analysis anonymously. All agreed that this incident should be investigated. Some went further. While there may be questions about if the use of lethal force could be applied in Basil's case, for Adam, this appears to be a violation of international humanitarian law, a war crime, and a violation of the human right to life. Another expert said, "The soldiers were in armored vehicles. Even if there was a threat, they should have driven away and planned an arrest, rather than defaulting to apparently indiscriminate lethal force, which is a violation of international law." We've also observed other behavior, like the possible mutilation of a body. We were told that remains of the deceased, even if they were lawfully killed, must be respected. What you report violates international humanitarian law and may even constitute a war crime. Others said that Palestinians being threatened with knives and guns and subjected to acts of vandalism could be breaches of international law and should also be investigated. What we've documented raises serious questions about the legality of Israeli military conduct in the West Bank.
A towering, heavily graffitied concrete wall.
How the Israeli military maintains security is clearly having a fundamental impact on the next generation of Palestinians who are growing up inside this conflict.
Al-Faraya refugee camp.
So we're just inside a teacher's home here. The teacher here is saying that because the education for Palestinian kids in this area is just so limited, he's actually having to open up his home at nighttime to try and offer kids more support, both educationally as well as psychologically, given what they've been going through. What was that?
It's gunfire.
Fire. Incoming or outgoing? You know, I grew up in the UK with all the freedom that that comes with, right? I mean, for kids like yourselves, what do you feel like are the biggest limitations on you?
We want a life like yours. We love this life more than you do, but nobody is letting us live like you live. We have no freedom.
How many of you guys have lost family members or friends from the violence going on here?
This year?
Just in general.
All of us. Everyone in Palestine has. Resistance is the answer. We're defending our land. Can I ask you a question? If someone took your phone by force, how would you take it back? This land is ours, just like how this phone is yours. Nobody should take your phone, and nobody should take your land by force. At the end of the day, resistance comes in various forms. It might be peaceful, and it might be armed. We're not fighting Israelis just for the sake of it.
Do you guys see any alternative to physical resistance, to fighting against Israel?
No, there isn't any. Inside a vehicle being driven at night, blurry orbs of light flickering in the darkness. There's a new generation of armed Palestinian groups in the West Bank. Some were involved in over 500 violent incidents against the Israeli military and settlers in the West Bank. It's estimated 14 Israelis died in that period as a result of violence linked to armed groups in the West Bank.
We're just on our way to meet with some members of the Palestinian armed resistance. We don't know exactly where it's going to be. Obviously, these guys are being hunted by the Israelis right now. They're very much wanted people. They've asked us to leave our phones, leave our tracking device, leave everything. We want to meet them here. Here they are. They look like the right people. So they ran off down this alley through here. So a couple of masked guys with guns kind of lurking in the alleyways right now. It's all very secretive. Okay, these guys.
A resistance fighter in a balaclava says, "We can't be on the street for more than 5 minutes."
So you're worried about drones watching or airstrikes?
Yes, they target us through drones.
Okay. All right, well, let's not stand in the middle of the street.
Isabel and the camera crew are led through a warren of narrow alleys, then into a small room. Two fighters sit, while two others stand behind them, hands resting on their semi-automatics.
Is it safe for us to be in here right now?
No, it's not.
How has the situation changed since October 7th?
The Israelis became enraged following October the 7th, and they've taken all their hatred out on us with all their might. We've been living the worst days of our lives since October the 7th.
You know, the Israelis would call you guys terrorists. They say that, you know, you are using violent tactics against Israeli people, and that poses a risk to them and that they need to protect themselves. And that has only got even more important since October 7th.
In my opinion, the world should look at everything that happened before October the 7th and the events and reasons that led to October the 7th. What about the suffering endured by Palestinians and the massacres committed against them? What about the killing of unarmed children, women, and the elderly?
You know, on October 7th, a lot of reports emerged of Israeli people, civilians, being killed, brutally abused, kidnapped. I'm just asking from a human perspective, you might be able to empathize with what they've also been through.
Do they empathize with us? The Israeli people endorse their government, and they're the ones who elected them. They kill and assassinate us. They've destroyed Gaza. They've destroyed the West Bank. And they say nothing.
You know, we've been seeing pretty consistent, large-scale operations carried out by the Israeli Defense Forces on you and on other camps. How has the resistance been impacted?
For every person they kill, there's another joining the ranks. If you go around Jenin Camp and ask anyone who's around 15 years old what they wish they could own, they'd say a rifle. Why do they want rifles? Because they've witnessed deep pain, injustice and persecution. There is no ability for them to live a good life and to live safely. Yair Golan, former IDF Deputy Chief of Staff.
It's a very tough situation. We see an ongoing deterioration in the situation in the West Bank. In part to the policy of our current government, which unfortunately supports annexation of the West Bank. It has unfortunately very severe consequences.
Talking about occupation or not is a political question. The IDF's goal is whatever the government tells it to do. The government tells it tomorrow to evacuate the whole of the West Bank of Jews, it will do it because that's what it was told to do.
The way Palestinians live in the West Bank, it's so obvious that there's so much violence in their lives. There is a cultural problem in the IDF. I feel like most soldiers operate as if they had like a specific ideology of wanting to hurt Palestinians or wanting to get back at them. To assume that people can interact with the army the way Palestinians do on a daily basis and still go about their lives as if nothing happened. To feel that people living this reality will not take up arms is at best naive and dehumanizing. Things are getting worse.
In slow motion, a teenager is greeted with tinsel cannons when he enters a room.
The next generation, like Aboud, have already known too much conflict and death in their lives. They're coming of age with very little hope and a burning desire for change.
A birthday cake.
You turned 18, that's like you're becoming an adult, right? What do you want for the next phase of your life?
For us to be free with no one ruling over us and for us to live in peace.
What did you wish for when you blew out those candles?
I wished to be reunited in heaven with my friends who were killed. Watched by his friends, Aboud cuts into his birthday cake.
Israel does face threats in the West Bank, but the actions of its own military that we've seen may well be in breach of international law. Across the territory, violence is surging. Land is being seized and children are dying. The situation is approaching a tipping point.
In the 6 months following October the 7th, 8,270 Palestinians were arrested, 4,890 were injured, 451 were killed. In the same period in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, 91 Israelis were injured, 9 were killed. People strolling at night along narrow and dimly lit streets. So far, in 2024, 36 Palestinian children have been killed by settlers or Israeli forces. Abood toying with a piece of birthday cake on a paper plate with his family and friends gathered around him.